This is the Courier Talking Football.
You know, that classic footballing dictum, inside leg and all that sort of stuff. You know, but as my old granny used to say, if you ask me for my philosophy of the game, facts are cheels that win a ding.
You make a good point though, Jim, because
that's unusual, Eric.
I know, I thought you'd pick up on that.
That's football, Eric. It's a sign of intelligence, being able to entertain a thought without actually kind of believing in it. I'm not using the commas, in case you snatch it before
Nobody's
me,
listening. I'm Eric Nicholson, and with me is Jim Spence. It's a double act this week, with only me to interrupt you when you're in full flow, Jim. It's only right that we start with Dundee this week, I suggest. The stats are looking very encouraging all of a sudden. Unbeaten in 6 and 5 clean sheets in a row for the first time since 2014, my team of researchers tell me. A revival built on solid foundations, I would suggest.
Was that your extensive team of researchers, was it? I know you're
Dundee
kind of
mob-handed
down to Dundee Press Officer. No, listen, I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's banged them up in, you know, league position-wise. I mean, the second, we've talked about this long away, the second spot has got to be the spot to go for. I mean, James McBake, some time back, kind of pretty much, conceded the league. The way United have gone, you do start to wonder. The lead down to 14 points.
Hold that thought.
Let's hold that. It's that's a sign of intelligence, being able to entertain a thought without actually kind of believing in it, or what would you say? But I think it's fantastic. The 5 clean sheets is brilliant. And we've written about this, and we've spoken about this in the podcast before. I think you cannot underestimate the importance of Christophe Berra and what he's done, in that back line. Well, they're playing a 3 at the moment, what he's done to that defence. I mean, I'm a big Hazard fan as well, so, we might talk about him. But, 5 clean sheets, fantastic, unbeaten in 6. And you just sense that it's starting to come good. I mean, given, the roller coaster season Dundee have had, you want to be careful about eulogising, overly much about them, but those are good statistics. That's good form they're showing.
But James McPake was obviously a centre-half, and even managers who aren't centre-halves, they always like to see revivals, momentum built on defensive stats, don't they? And I'm thinking that is why he is so encouraged, because he'll feel that there's better yet to come. Because if he's got a chance in every game, isn't he? It's stating the obvious, but if you're keeping clean sheets, you're not going to lose.
Well, I mean, if you're keeping clean sheets, Eric, all you have to do is score one. Mm-hmm. One is sufficient. It's a bit tight to be picking up all 3 points, but one is sufficient if you are keeping clean sheets.
And when it's 3-2s, 4-3s, you feel like managers feel like they're losing control, don't they?
Well, that's right. And you kind of sense that any advantage you've built up during the course of a game can disappear at any moment. But when you have that solidity, and at the moment you do have that solidity, I mean, Hazard, I like in goal. He's not quite an imposing figure. He's a very decent keeper. And you've got the kind of back three, Berra, Forster, Meekings. They're a strong trio.
Physically strong.
That's right, and then you've got the kind of, the two pushing on with McDade and Elliot as well, So I think that strength at the back, I mean, if you ask me for my philosophy of the game, I want to see kind of sweet, beautiful, flowing football. But I've also got no objection to 60-yard diagonal pass to knockdown and in the net. Mm-hmm. And similarly, at the back, I just think defenders should. It's fine if you're Manchester City and you can play about with 16 passes before you reach midfield, but at Scottish level, clear the lines. Keep the ball away from your goalkeeper as much as possible and just, keep the opposition at bay. And that's what Dundee have done. I mean, 5 clean sheets is a terrific turnaround for them.
And you have to talk about Berra again, don't you? Because it's no coincidence, is it? It can't be a coincidence that things have improved defensively since he's come in. It's as clear as night and day, isn't it?
I'm staring you in the face. I mean, the facts are cheels that win a ding, as they, as they would say in the Scots, as my old granny used to say. I mean, it's quite simple. They have tightened up dramatically and considerably, and I think you have to look at the solidity that he has brought. And I think it's that other thing. You talk all the time, yourself, at any level you've played at, there are guys that lead on the park. They're giving you a wee word of advice. Go there, do that, sit there, show him left, You're just getting that wee bit of advice all the time. And players respond to that. I mean, he's got a couple of, decent experienced players around about him anyhow, but players respond to that. They respond to somebody, in any organisation, there's a handful of leaders, and football's no different. I mean, not every player in every football team is a leader, it'd be fantastic, but they're not. Lots of players have individual skills and all the rest of it, but you need the organiser. You need the guy that can. And I'll tell you what, I'll be taking a huge amount of weight off James McPaig's back as well, because you've got a young manager and a guy in who knows the game inside out, who has been a top class defender. And that will be taking a huge weight off James McPaig as well. All of a sudden, you know, the shoulders are kind of lifted that wee bit higher, the chest is out a wee bit, because they're keeping clean sheets and they're, you know, they're sneaking up the table.
Do you pay a lot of attention to formations? Or the significance of them?
Formations and tactics, I think, grow increasingly less important the more skillful, the more skillful
the
team. The higher you go. I mean, I think, you know, it's much easier to, if you've got guys at Manchester City, for instance, who can play 4-4-2 or 4-3-3, they're there because they can play that. You know, you've got fullbacks, you've got central defenders who are comfortable in the ball, who can pass the ball, who can take a ball in tight positions and play it and use it and utilise it better than players who might be midfielders or forwards in the Scottish level. That's a simple fact of life. But I think what players like certainty and they like to know that here's the system we're going to play. You're working it all week in the training ground, you go through, you visualise it, you know, you go through it on the VT, you watch, you know, recordings, you set it out and you play in training games. I mean, every now and again you'll play, no doubt, bounce games and all the rest of it, you know, either against the reserves, almost the A's against the B's, you know, or you'll set up wee defensive, as every coach does, wee defensive notions, you know, 3 against 5 or whatever, you know. And I think players like that sense of stability. Now, for the moment, that system they've got, it's actually a 3-4-1-2, isn't it? He was playing last night, because you've got McGowan sitting in front of a midfield
3-5-2 for those who like to be a bit more simple with these things.
And I think that's, you know, there's a fluidity built in any system, I think. You know, I mean, you kind of, it's a 3-5-2, but strictly speaking, when they're under the cosh, you've got two full-backs, two wing-backs, if you want, dropping back.
You make a good point, though, Jim, because that's
unusual.
I thought you'd pick up on that. We must have some sound effects for that, no? looking at a producer there. Anyway, no, I thought Neil McCann and Paul Hartley, one of the big downfalls of both their times, with particularly Neil McCann, was the chopping and changing of formation and the uncertainty that came off that.
If you think of those two players, and you know, this is no any kind of aside with James McPaig, but Hartley and McCann were both forward type players, you know, kind of midfield stroke, kind of forward. McCann was a wide player. Hartley, I mean, when I remember Hartley, I actually remember him as a wide player, you know.
And when he started,
slotting an attacking midfield role. So they were probably more used to kind of fluid type play themselves individually. And it may well be that, you know, I think there's almost a bit of the Glenn Hoddle system in here, you know, when he was taking England players in training and saying, no, here's how you do it. He could do things that top players couldn't do. So I think when you're a manager, you've got to be able to be fluid, but you've got to be able to be fluid and flexible within the system of what players are comfortable with. There is no point whatsoever in asking a central defender who's basically a big, strong guy, and I'm not talking about just Dundee players, who's a big, strong guy. There's no any point in asking him to bring it down, beat two men, and play a 40-yard diagonal pass on the deck. You know, like Messi. I mean, that's not the game. So you stick to the system. What are my players good at? What can they handle? What can they not handle? And you stick to that. And players quite quickly get comfortable. And not just comfortable, the confidence grows from that.
Because I saw analysis of Bournemouth recently. Mm. Now, here you are, you're at the top flight English football, vastly paid professionals, and they were talking about how things start to go wrong because they had two left-sided centre-backs on the pitch, and just how they weren't comfortable, you know, in showing you the positions, the body shapes and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. So it's, you can't underestimate the value of square pegs and square holes, can you?
No, I mean, absolutely. And I mean, for all we, you know, this conversation is as old as football itself, about, you know, one-footed players and all the rest. Actually, the vast bulk of players, even at top level, are actually still one-footed, you know. So if you ask a right-footed player to play left back, it becomes difficult for them, because the natural tendency is to want to cut in. And there's always kind of 10-15% of that player that's always going to be slightly uncomfortable, who's always going to be a chunk of him trying to get himself almost into an unnatural position and taking his mind off just for the moment what he's doing against the opponent. So, yeah, square pegs don't fit round holes. And I think for the moment, James McPaig, you know, with the addition of Berra, it's not a one-man team. I mean, we've been saying long and weary there's been a good team in there trying to get out. I'll tell you what James McPaig has done. And I have to admit this, because you know I am not a fan of the January window, and by and large, as a rule, I stand by mm-hmm. that it's a window that it's really hit or miss, and more often it's a miss. But he has done really well with his mm-hmm. sign. Was it five? Was it six signings he made in that window? And he's done really well. I mean, he's one to watch with some of the signings. But you know, the biggest one I think is Berra, and I think Hazard in goal has mm-hmm. made a big difference as well. So I mean, he has run, he's done it. But there's things right throughout the side, I think, that are now starting to click. You know, Dorn's Burn. I'm a Burn fan.
Yeah, we'll come on to him next. But credit to James McPeak. I mean, I should really ask him next time I see him. But I'd be pretty confident that he, when he brought Berra in, that he didn't think, right, we're changing to a 3-5-2. I think he's reacted to what he's seen around him, and he's, for whatever reason, he's given it a go and he has stuck with it. But you know, there's too many managers that are fixated on formations mm-hmm. and this is how mm-hmm. I play. This is like used the dreaded philosophy word. This is mm-hmm. how I do it and all the rest of it. And no, mm-hmm. we're sticking to this.
Well, you know, I mean,
you've got to be flexible, haven't you?
Yeah, you've got to be flexible. But I mean, I suspect as well. I mean, James is a.
Because Berra didn't play in a three at Hearts.
No, he didn't. But I mean, he also played in a defence that kind of pushed up a wee bit more. Mm-hmm, they played a kind of higher, a higher push up, a higher line up. You know, which if you've not got the legs you once had, and he doesn't, you know, then that becomes awkward. Whereas at Dens, I think I said this before, they're playing in a more traditional format. You know, not mm-hmm. necessarily with three, but you know, playing further back, which is more comfortable. I think you're not going to get exposed. I mean, if someone gets away from you, they're only 15 yards from goal. You know, you get more chance to recover rather than get skinned if you're playing a really kind of high line. My suspicion would be also that when Christophe Berra, because he wasn't a guy that would have been without decent offers. My suspicion is that he probably talked, you know, long and weary with James mm-hmm. about how are we going to play this? Mm-hmm. Where do you see me fitting in? What do you see my role as? You know, probably talked about the type of system and all the rest. Either that or once he started to play, James has thought, well, this would work. You know, mm-hmm. this guy's an organiser, he's a leader. He shuffles people about the back. He knows what he's doing. It kind of takes a weight off him. He's a highly experienced defender. And it may well be that's the system that just almost they have seamlessly slipped into.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned him just there before, and I think he's absolutely crucial to Dundee's hopes of getting up through the playoffs. Because I think we all think they're going to get in them now. Yeah. Sean Byrne, there's a guy that was one of the best players in his position, certainly in the championship when mm-hmm. Livingston went up, and in the top flight as well. You know, just, and I think what McPeak has managed to do, he's given him a run. You mm-hmm. know, he's kind mm-hmm. of, he's moved away from the sort of taking Finlay Robertson in and mm-hmm. out, you know, trying other players playing a wee bit too deep in that midfield. Byrne's got his role. He's getting games. I think he knows what he's doing in the team. Obviously, he's got Berra behind him, which helps mm-hmm. no doubt. And if they've got the best, well, one of the best defensive midfielders in the league, it's going to help your team, isn't it? Really is.
I think the key was the word you used there: getting games. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's back to that kind of whole thing about stability breeding confidence. When you're playing, and when you're playing regularly, and every player wants to play. You know, there's something wrong with a player that doesn't want to play regularly. Every player wants to play regularly. You know, and when you're playing regularly, you're getting fitter. You're getting match fitter because, you know, all the training in the world and playing, you know, reserve football doesn't compensate for playing at the top level, you know, that you will be doing in the first team. So that, you know, the match fitness, the match sharpness that brings, the mental kind of sharpness that brings, and just playing on a regular basis, I think, and now you're really starting to see the best. I was the same as you. I mean, I was an admirer of Byrne when I saw him previously. I thought he was a very decent player indeed. It's taken a wee while mm-hmm. for it to work at Dens, but now it's working. And I think the other thing is, you know, I'm on record, I'm quite happy to repeat this. The Dundee crowds, not just Dundee, United as well, but Dundee crowd can be a hard, hard crowd to play to. But the last couple of games, I think, you know,
there's been a change.
They're understanding that, look, if you give guys support, you're watching guys giving you everything that they've got. You can never ask for more than that. You know what I mean? You can't ask a guy mm-hmm. to be messy if he's not, but what you're entitled to ask is that he gives you 100%. And when he's giving you 100%, people by and large will appreciate that.
Yeah.
They'll let the occasional mistake go and all the rest of it, but when you're giving 100%, as they are doing at the moment, and the crowd is with you, and the team is with the crowd. I mean, crowds don't score goals, but what they can do is they can encourage and they can lift the team.
They can inhibit as well.
They can inhibit as well.
Well, James McPaik, he's been consistent with his message on that, and you pay attention to his words when he says it, and he's never ducked away from the whole, you know, because he's been asked about it a lot, because Dundee fans were so unhappy, you know, for big chunks in the season. He's now said the atmosphere is back. So I think he feels that this is crowd and players working in unison now, and that's crucial, isn't it?
Well, it's crucial, I think, in the respect that, you know, I've said this before, James is a young manager. Mm-hmm. And he's learning.
Do you see him? Do you see him learning?
Yeah, absolutely. You can see it now. Uh-huh. You can see it now. You can see it with the Berra signing. You can see it with bringing Hazard in. You can see it with the way he's utilising Byrne, the way he's starting to play him. You can see it with a system that's working. You know, the 3-5-2 system is working for him. I think also Hemmings is starting to flow. You know, we said this before. He was a quality striker, but the goals weren't coming for him. They have been in recent times. Nelson, you feel for, because, you know, not hitting the target as he would like, but contributing big time, you know, in terms of kind of providing and grafting, you know, and you need that. You need a combination of qualities in the team. And you can see McPaik, I think, growing into the role.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's probably the best way of summing it up. Well, there's a wee gap up. It's starting to look good for them in the playoffs. There's a wee gap opening up. The late goal that Dunfermline conceded certainly helped them. The chance to get a 7-point lead with a game in hand, if my maths don't let me down on Saturday when the teams meet.
Yeah.
That would be a significant move, wouldn't it?
Well, I think it would be a massive move. I mean, a win takes them to 44 points, leaves Dunfermline on 37. And at this stage, you're looking at 8 games left. You're ending as it's 7 or something left, you know. I think that then becomes psychologically a big, big hurdle to get over for Dunfermline. I mean, I've kind of pretty much, I must admit, there was a wee spell, wrote a courier column, in fact, Dunfermline went a wee spell, yeah. And I actually think there's a good side at Dunfermline. Well, there's a lot of decent players
Nisbet's
there.
Nisbet's out just now, which obviously helps.
That's right. They have suffered from that, you know, that classic footballing dictum, consistency. Mm-hmm. You know, getting consistency, which of course is what James McPaik and Dundee are now getting. But I mean, I think if they win this one, and that's not a given by any manner of means, you know, I mean, I think it's a tough game, but if they win that, I think psychologically that then becomes a really, really big boost in terms of claiming a top 4 spot in a playoff position.
Right, on to United, and this is a strange question for you, Jim, but how have we come to the point where the manager of a team who are 14 points ahead at the top of the table with games running out, how have we got to the point where a manager feels he has to say things like, "We feel your pain," to the supporters?
I think he has to say it because he is getting the feedback. He knows it. I mean, there's a lot of very unhappy United fans out there. I mean,
what was it like on Saturday?
Well, I mean, the first half, Thistle were a better side. I mean, you know, Sigurdsson had a couple of really good saves. Had a blare with McCall at the end of the game. And I mean, to be honest, I have to say, McCall, how are you guys at the bottom of the league?
Yeah.
Because at times they looked actually quite a sweet moving side, but they're struggling, and they may well go. In fact, it's very likely they will go
playoffs at best.
Playoffs at best. But from a United perspective, there's a tiredness, there's a flatness, there's a lack of energy. I mean, there was one period, I'm trying to remember, it was after Sigurdsson's second save or a move broke down. I mean, there was just this kind of horrendous booing for about 5 seconds round the ground. And, you know, you look around in the press box, I have to say, even the press box was was nothing like fools. There's only about 8 people in the press box. And I'm normally on the gantry, radio or television upstairs, but it was in the press box on Saturday. I mean, normally that's kind of, you're like 15, 20 people in there. There was just a sense of surrealness about it, you know, with the kind of struggle to get a point out of that one. So there's a flatness, the crowd aren't lifting them. I don't mean the crowd are on their back, but there is, you're seeing it online and social media and all the rest of it, and just generally.
People can dismiss that, but it's there's enough of them out there. You'll see them as much as I do. I mean, the way I see it, I think there's a very definite divide. You're either in the nothing else matters but promotion camp. I don't care how we get it, bigger picture, blah, blah, blah. United are going up. What are you worrying about? And then there's those that say, hold on a minute, I'm not watching good performances. I have a right to call out when I'm not seeing good performances. don't let results blind you. Which, do you think that's a fair summary? That's the fair split?
There's a combination of things. I mean, I always think, as a journalist, when you're paid to go and watch football, you've not got the right to criticise fans for having a pop, because they're mm-hmm. paying their 300 or 400 quid a year for their season books, or they're paying 22 or 24 quid to walk up and watch the game, sometimes more depending on you know, where they're sitting on the ground. So you have not got the right to have a pop at people who pay... basically pay, you know, footballers' wages, and ultimately, I suppose, pay our wages as well, you know. So, however, I think there's a fine line, again, between trying to encourage the team, getting on the team's case. And players do read social media, and so, you know, some players are mentally weaker than others, and they will take criticism at heart, and they'll slap. And bluntly, some players don't care as much as others. Yeah. There might be one or two there who are already contemplating an exit in the summer. They might be thinking, my time here is up, my time is done, I'm going, I'm not going to stay. There might be one or two that are not on longer contracts or just want out the door. They're just off the boil, mentally, physically off the boil. It's a tiring time of the season. You're kind of heading to the finish line, but you're tired, you're zipped, you know, the legs are heavy. The appetite, the spirit, happens to the best of players. Not every player, and this is the Scottish Championship. They're not the best players in the world. I mean, that's not a brutal assessment. That's a simple reality. So there are guys in there, I think, who are tired. And then there were things like, you know, on Saturday, you know, Louis Appert came on, and by the way, congratulations to him for his Scotland call. But you know, immediately Thistle doubled up on him and made life very, very hard for him. Shanklin never got any service whatsoever. He must have been really, really, you know, angry and frustrated at the lack of service that he got. Rakesh Bingham, he's got a bit of pace about him, but he threatened very little, and he kind of flattered to deceive when he did have the ball. So it was. I mean, what I will say was Power scored a goal. It was absolutely out of this world. It was stunning, kind of a stunning hit, tremendous goal. But you just kind of sense, I mean, it was kind of, you know, it was a team who were riding high at the top against a team struggling and looking at relegation. And it was hard to tell the difference on the day. So, you know, when Robbie, there's no much you can say. He, I feel your pain, because he's feeling the pain as well. Yeah. You know, he will be looking to finish the season on a real high. And at the moment, it's not happening. At the moment, they're limping towards the finishing line. I don't think there's a danger, you know, that, I mean, you know, I remember Jim Duffy having a Dundee side 6 points clear of the relegation pathway, 9 points clear with six games to go. And they got relegated, which most of us thought could never, ever happen. I think this is a different situation. I don't think Dundee United are going to blow, what is it? It's now a 14-point lead, I think, after last night.
Inverness, you know, a game in hand,
that's right. But I don't think they're going to blow up. But hey, you know what? It's football, and anything can happen. Somewhere along the line, he has to reinvent the morale, the spirit, and it's almost like kind of what McPaik has done at Dens. He's got that side flowing again. He's got that side kind of playing with a bit of passion, a bit of heart and all the rest, and a bit of zip and a bit of tempo. And at the moment, all of that seems to be lacking from United.
With your finger in the wind guide, how would you, percentage-wise, the split in the United fans, what would you put it? Do you still think you're talking about 90% of the United fans are... you know, we just need to get up, come up with whatever happens. Well, no, 10% mourners, closer to 50-50 than
I mean,
that?
I think we're probably talking in terms of kind of maybe 70-30.
Yeah.
With this, it might be even more. I mean, there's a couple of, you know, I'm a big social media fiend, as you will know. But, social media crosses the age boundaries. You know, I mean, you know, Twitter, which, you know, I use regularly.
And you're on the buses as well.
I was on the bus. I was saving the planet today on the way in, you know. There's a wide, wide age range, and you kind of, you know, I watch one or two guys that I know, because Dundee's a global village, and I watch one or two guys, you know, that kind of take my position and say, look, for God's sake, you're going to win the league, okay, you know, the football's not pretty, it's not good to watch, it's, you know, objectively, it's not pretty to watch. However, the key, and some people are getting ahead of themselves, this team will never do in the Premier League. We know that.
They're
not good enough for the Premiership. We know that. And you trust that Robbie Nielsen and Tony Asgard and the people who run the show at Tardice are already in negotiations and looking about strengthening the team and all the rest of it. So for the moment, it is about getting up, but people do have the right to... they've got the right to demand entertainment, whether they get it or not. And everybody's view of entertainment is wholly subjective. The guy, you know, I mean, the, you know, a pre-season friendly, I sat with somebody in the stand who's a good pal of mine and had to move. because it was just unbearable. Up every 2 seconds, shouting, bawling at referees, shouting, bawling at players. That's not the way I want to watch football. But there's a lot of people that do that are like that. And that's the problem with football. Football fans are not homogenous. They are different. They're all different. But there's, I mean, you know, even some of the some mates of mine who are of my vintage, I mean, there's one or two of them that would quite happily see Robbie Nielsen going out the door. There's one or two of them that are horrified at the football. There's one or two of them that are horrified at the prospect that we might, you know, lose out on promotion. That was the royal we there. you know, and then there are others that are saying, look, for God's sake, get a grip.
Yeah.
Get a grip. You're 14 points clear. You're going to win the league. Strengthen when they need to strengthen. You know, let's just get over the line. But that's football, Eric. I mean, you know, at every level, that is football, whether it's at Brechin City, whether it's at Chelsea, Celtic or Dundee United.
It's a broad church.
Range, a broad church.
Mm-hmm. Are you mentioned the goal he scored, Mr. Powers. Are you one of those that's come to the conclusion, though, that the two Americans together is... doesn't give you the balance in the midfield that you'd want?
He looks off the pace to me. I mean, to be honest with you, looking at the midfield,
less subtlety about the, more yeah, power and less subtlety more, about the two
yeah,
of them.
Aptly names, but I mean, to be honest, you're looking right through the midfield. I thought the midfield was disappointing.
Paulus nowhere near the player I remember. No, at Aberdeen. You can forget that player almost, can't you? Physically, look at him. He's you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, he's obviously put on a lot of muscles, injuries, all the rest of it, but. He's a frustrating player to watch.
Body language, I think, tells you a lot about a player. You know, I mean, when you see him kind of going on about his business, when you see him coming off the park, there's a droop of the shoulders. There's almost like a weary resignation there. You know, and you kind of wonder: is he just a guy who needs a fresh challenge? Is he a guy who needs kind of something else to lift him, to regenerate his career? Because at the moment, it's not. I mean, he was an incredibly exciting player just a few years ago, but it's certainly not working for him at the moment. Powers looks absolutely off the pace to me. He's a strong guy. He's a strong guy. And he scored a tremendous goal and all the rest of it. But I'm not sure what I was expecting. He's come at an awkward time and all the rest of it as well. You know, but he just doesn't look.
I was expecting a bit more dynamism.
Yeah, well, that's right, and that's not there. I mean, it's been pretty flat. I think Harks. I know there's some people that just dislike Harks intensely.
He really does divide opinion, doesn't he?
He really divides opinion. I quite like him. I mean, he's not. Look, I mean, the problem. You know, generational is a problem here as well. If you're of my generation, you've seen a midfield that has contained players that were as good as anything in Europe, you know. And you've seen players that theoretically some people thought were just pretty average players. You've seen Holtz and Kirkwoods who were, on reflection, astonishingly useful players, astonishingly good players, you know. So, you know, I mean, generationally, Dundee United are where they are. On Saturday, they were where they were, and it wasn't a pretty thing to watch. It was dire.
Where they are, were where they were. I like that. I might use that.
I'm going to use it on the comments, in case you snatch it before
nobody's
me, yeah?
Listening. Well, the next four on, I was going to say odd paper, but maybe at the start of the season, you would think, oh, that's okay. We'd like that. Morton, Alloa, Arbroath, Queen in the South. Sort of games you can put this title race to bed, Jim?
I mean, theoretically it would have been, wouldn't it, you know, at one time. But
they've won one in nine.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, you know, you've all of a sudden got a situation where Morton, Hopkin, who I like as a manager, is doing a good job.
They're improving, aren't they?
You know, they're improving. They're doing a really good job with them. Peter Grant has got Alloa absolutely up for the scrap. You know, I mean, Peter spent, 15 years at Celtic, a really combative midfielder. Yeah,
they're a well-drilled team.
Well-drilled, you know, organised, they graft hard. I mean, it was funny. I was looking yesterday back to, 2011? You know, my oldest boy, Laurie, was on the bench. Alec Gray had him on the bench for Dundee as a 17-year-old in the Challenge Cup. Alloa 1-2-1 that day, and I was looking through some of the names that had been in there, you know, that day. And Kevin McCauley was there. Now he's still kind of doing the stuff, isn't he, at Alloa? He's a Slater sale. I think he works for Slater or something. you know, inside leg and all that sort of stuff. You know, but they're just a good side. Alloa are a hard grafting part time side. So and then you come to Arbroath. Now who would put money on beating Arbroath with the Campbell twins having the lefties fired up? Queen of the South have been a disaster zone recently, so there's probably points to be had there. But all of a sudden, three of those four that looked like it might have been an easier run-in don't look like an easier run-in at all.
Yeah. Well, one team that's looking forward to every game just now is St Johnstone. It was I did the Saints Livy game, and it was far from a classic. In fact, it looked 0-0 all over. It would have been Saints' second 0-0 in a row, and would probably have killed their top six hopes. I would have thought. Callum Hendry does his thing again though late on, and all of a sudden on Saturday, Saints have the chance to leapfrog Hibs into sixth place. I mean, I was looking back when I was writing my piece up for Monday's paper, my wee analysis piece, saying that this would be a contender for Tommy Wright's best achievement, to take them from relegation threatened bottom of the league to the top six if they see it through. The stats that stuck out, they've lost three games since, do you remember the Motherwell game away in November when Tommy really, he basically said enough is enough. I think they conceded from four cross balls that day, 4-0. Since that day, they've lost two against Celtic, one of them in the cup, and one at Livingston when they had a Stonewall penalty claim turned down. And let's face it, Livingston are not losing anybody on their own plastic. Mm-hmm. That's it, Jim. That's...
Eric, you know what, we were talking about James McPake and the resurgence at Dens, which has been brilliant, you know. Tommy Wright, this has been Lazarus quality. You know, I mean, we're talking about Mojo's getting rediscovered here, aren't we? There were people talking about, you know, maybe it's time for Tommy to move on and get a new job. I mean, I was doing a Q&A on Friday night with Stuart Cosgrove from Perth and the detective Colin McCurry of Tiger Fame were doing that, you know. And it was a great night. It was for the Genefield Youth Development Fund. But mainly Saints fans in the audience, scattering the Celtic and Rangers men and United and Dundee men, but mainly Saints fans, you know. And I think it's fair to say Tommy is much loved in Perth. He's much loved. He's much regarded. You know, he is highly thought of. So, but there was an element. There was an mm-hmm. element they were kind of putting the boot in there and thinking maybe it's time for him to go and mm-hmm. the team's tired and all
younger
the rest.
Younger man, blah, blah, blah.
Younger man. I mean, he's only in his 50s.
Yeah, I know. He's always suffered from that, hasn't he?
It's a nonsense. I mean, he is an old looking bloke. You know, there's no doubt about that. Sorry, Tommy.
He says he doesn't dye his hair either.
I'm not believing that. I'll give him a few cuttings, actually. No, but I mean, it's utterly remarkable, you know, to lose three since the Motherwell in November, and as you say, two of them against Celtic, and one right at the death against Celtic. You know, I mean, yeah. It's a remarkable performance. Now, we've talked previously about how he's brought the average age of the side down, fresh legs. The other thing is, Saints are starting to develop kids coming through their own ranks. They're starting to spot good kids and get them in early and all the rest of it. So the club, I think, has refound rediscovered mm-hmm. its mojo, mm-hmm. you know, the word you were using earlier on there. And you look at it, and all of a sudden you've got a partnership up front of Henry and the veteran Stevie May, mm-hmm. you know, the old guy, you know. There's a midfield, you know, like McCann, you know, what a talent McCann is, you know. Dre Wright, don't know what's happening with him, is he staying, is he going, you know. He's a talent, you know. Right at the back, big Xander Clark, who I thought someone would have come in and snapped Xander up, I have to say. But if they don't, good for Saints, because you know you've got a fine big keeper in the back.
And another team
quite
that's
a young side,
another
you
team
know.
That's enjoyed playing the back three, although Tommy's chopped and changed a bit mm-hmm. more, but very comfortable with the three bigs at Chris. Jamie McCart, sorry, I keep saying Chris McCart, signing he has been. But I mean I saw him a couple of times for Inverness against United in Dundee. Mm-hmm. Didn't stand out. I don't remember coming away thinking, that boy should be playing in playing their Premiership pronto.
But did you come away thinking you made a mess of anything?
No.
I mean, and that's what you're looking for. You know, you've got Kerr, Gordon, McCart across that, you know, that three at the back and solid, looking really, really solid, you know. And then you've got your kind of two wing backs pushing on. You've got Wright pushing on and Tanzer kind of pushing on as well. And you've now got a bit of craft in the midfield with, you know, with McCann and Holton Butcher. And up front, Henry, I mean, you know, he's a player, that laddie.
Yeah, I think Tommy's always seen it.
He's a player, you know, and Stevie's rediscovered his zest for life in a football strip, you know. So things are looking really, really good now. I mean, top six, you know, I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember if I tipped him. I think I might have at the start of the season, you know. But I mean, here's the thing with Saints. Traditionally, in the last number of years, we have just thought of St Johnstone as a top six side, you know. And that's why so many of us took ill with watching them struggle at the start of the season. It was always fanciful, I think, to think they were going to be relegated. I don't think I thought they would resurge in the way that they've done. And that's testimony to a manager that every now and again throws a wee grenade in there with his chairman or whatever, you know, and knows how to utilize the media.
I think it gets him going, doesn't it?
Yeah, it kind of shakes him up as well. Every now and again, he needs. I mean, you know, if I'm working at a game with Saints, I normally go up and see Tommy before I interview him. You sit and you chew the fat. You go into his wee office and you sit and chew the fat for 20 minutes, and you know he knows the game inside out. You know, and you get kind of tidbits here and there, and you think you get an idea how he's going to play today. You get an idea of this, that, the next. He knows the game. He's not a panic merchant. You know, he's an experienced hand. He knows the game, you know. I always think about Tommy. There's a hinterland to Tommy. I mean, Tommy, he was a very good runner. Mm-hmm. Ran for Ireland, I think, you know. He's had some personal tragedy in his life. I think these things make people. You know, they make people, and I think Tommy has a much deeper hinterland than perhaps some managers I could think about. And I think all that life experience, all that experience of managing men
helps you in tough times.
It helps you in tough times.
Saturday then, surely bigger pressure on Hibs than Saints.
I think so. I mean, and this one. I mean, I'm glad to see Jack Ross doing relatively well at Hibs. Mm-hmm. I was surprised the other week when he got caned 3-0 from Hearts.
Did he maybe get off to two faster start because all of a sudden, you know, there was, from being a team near the bottom, you know, fans were thinking, oh, can we get into Europe? Whereas, obviously, the truth will be somewhere in the middle. But if they don't make top six, there'll be more unrest at Easter Road than there would be if Saints don't make
top six. I think so. I mean, there's a much bigger budget at Hibs, I have to say. And saying that, I think, you know, Jack is in this, you know, it will be the start of his building thing. And I think he's a good guy. He's a good man. He's a good human being. He's a good manager, I think, you know. And I think he... we'll get that club back in the right road. Hibs are a strange club. I'm fond of Hibs. I like the way they play football traditionally, you know. But I think sometimes there's almost been like something in the soul of the club that's lacked a bit of passion, which is quite strange given they've got this wonderful reputation. I mean, you know, next to Celtic, traditionally they're the side that most people thought played kind of great swashbuckling football.
When you go back in.
It comes from the famous five, and it comes from, you know, the great side with Stanton and Blackley and Cropley and Marinello and these sort of guys, you know. There is that traditional kind of that sometimes actually, you know, they're hidebound by. But at the moment, it's Saints that to me look as though they would be favourites for this game. Mm-hmm. Whether they can win or not, I mean, Hibs have got a lot of good players there. And I think you saw against United, you know, they were a class above United. Whether they're a class above St Johnstone is another thing.
I think if they go in front, but you know. Mm-hmm. Easter Road is another one of these grounds, isn't it? The longer you can stay on level terms, or even
crowd,
get ahead, you get
the crowd turning.
They're as powerful against as they are with, aren't they?
You get the crowd turning, and I think that's and I don't think there's a better side at doing that potentially than St Johnstone, because they are organised and they're disciplined and they know how to play and they know how to just kind of, you know, retain possession and all the rest of it, and they can snatch you on the break. I mean, you know, you've now got, you know, a front two in Henry and May who. Very, very adept at kind of hitting on the break, and I think that's the danger for Hibs, that, you know, you get St Johnstone soaking up, all of a sudden maybe going close with a couple of attempts and the fans are turning and Hibs are not scoring, and that's where the dangers lie, I think, for Jack Ross's side.
Alright, thanks Jim, enjoyed that. Thanks everybody for listening, and hopefully we'll be back next week if Jim's not self-isolating and we're keep your fingers crossed.
Or self-immolating.
That's the one as well, that as well. Thanks again, thank you.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it, or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people to find Talking Football, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget too to pick up your copy of The Courier Monday to Saturday, or go to thecourier.co.uk/subscribe to find out how to get our award-winning sport, business and local journalism across Tayside and Fife in the way that's right for you. The Courier. Local matters.